Good morning, Weekly Dose. I've got a feeling that it's gonna be a wonderful show. Val Kilmer in the sky has a smile on his face, and he's shining a salute to the comic reading race. Oh boy, it's swell to say!
Good morning, Weekly Dose.
Good morning, Weekly Dose.
Hello and welcome to another episode of The Weekly Dose, brought to you by Comic Book Therapy. I am Woody, supername.
I am Norwood.
Hey guys, this is the Xavier Moody Mariotto.
Hey, that doesn't sound like this.
You sound different somehow.
Yeah, you sound are you sick?
I have a cold.
Oh, okay.
That explains why you sound southern now and uninterested in everything. We got Cody the Thorverine with us tonight.
Hello.
Cody. How you doing, Cody?
Hey, Norwood, did you pick me up any pecan sandies this week?
No, I forgot. I'm sorry.
Pretty sure I asked for pecan sandies.
Was it on the list?
Yes, it is on the list. We just had a big Weekly Dose trip this weekend.
Oh, yes.
Weekly Dose crew met up for the first time. Didn't we? What happened to Dez?
I don't know. Did he get left behind in Indiana? Because
you guys drove together. Did you bring him back?
Huh. There might have been an absence of a...
Was there a prostitute that we're not supposed to talk about?
I don't know. I think he's a little busy this weekend. But, you know, it's good to have Cody back with us.
Yeah. Cody will do.
Thanks, Cass.
I'm sorry.
You were invited this weekend, so I don't know what to say to you.
I'm sorry it wasn't genuine, Cody. I'd rather have this here.
It was the city wedding this week, if you guys listened to the past episodes. Big time. We drank, we fought, we made our ancestors proud.
Indeed.
Indeed. Dez is a magnificent dancer, by the way.
Magnificent.
Yeah. All right. F this S. It's time for Norwood's Geek News Roundup. Yeehaw!
Yeah, guys. It's time for whatever Witty just said, because it changes every week.
Yes, it does.
So here we're going to start off with some Guardians of the Galaxy news. I'm not sure you guys... Do you know who Michael Rooker is, guys?
No.
I've heard that name before.
Okay. So this guy plays Merle on this show called The Walking Dead. I don't know if you've heard of that. It's probably not popular.
The Walking Dead?
The Walking Dead. Is that a show you guys heard of before?
Not really.
Oh, okay.
You're sure you're seeing it right, because the dead cannot walk.
Yeah, I know. It's so weird. Well, anyways, this show that comes on AMC, Michael Rooker played this character Merle in it, which, spoiler, this guy, he died recently. Came a zombie, a walker, for you people that don't know what The Walking Dead is.
I think I've seen this television program. Is he the one that hates Koreans?
yes.
Okay.
I believe so. Okay, well, Deadline is reporting that Rooker has joined the cast of Guardians of the Galaxy. He'll be playing the role of Yondu, a game hunter of a primitive tribe native to Centauri IV, the first planet system to be colonized outside of the sun's solar system. And eventually he bands together with the other band of fugitives to form the superhero team. Rooker will be joining Chris Pratt, who's playing Star-Lord, Dave Bautista, is playing Drax the Destroyer, and Zoe Saldana as Gamora. So, guys, what do you think about this news?
I just have one question. Is it the actor or the character that hates Koreans? Because I do not support Korean hate. I'm going to step out on a limb and make that known.
Well, you got to say that he's had roles in Mississippi Burning. So, yeah, I don't know, guys. Days of Thunder, JFK, and Tombstone. So you tell me. No, this guy's a great dude. He's a really good actor.
He is.
For me, I think it's just they're just adding a lot of great actors to this already. I mean, with him, it's legit now. Chris Pratt, I love Chris Pratt. He's funny. He can do, I think he can do serious roles. You know, he did Zero Dark Thirty. That little role was really good, and he got really good shape for that. Zoe Saldana, you know, she's in Star Trek. She's really good in that. And some other movies that I've seen before, you know, with her in it. Dave Bautista, I have no clue. I mean, other than his wrestling skill, I don't know. I think James Gunn says that, you know, Bautista's a really good actor, but I don't know. You have to take his word for it.
He was in The Man with the Iron Fist.
I didn't watch it.
It was a pretty bad movie, but he was. I'll give him credit. He was good in the part he had.
So you're saying bad is, and not in the good way, bad. Like,
it was
bad
as in I almost turned it off, but I just wanted to see how it
was. Was it really an acting stretch for him to pretend to punch people?
Not really.
Because that's his day job.
Exactly. Maybe that's where his acting skill comes in. He's really good at punching things. Well, anyways, moving on to the Amazing Spider-Man 2 news.
Ooh.
Now, I know I'm not. If you guys know, I don't. That listen to the show, I didn't like the first movie at all. It wasn't horrible in every way. I think some of the casting was really great, but.
Well, I liked it. Cody loved it. I'm ready for the sequel.
All right, so this week we had our first images of Electro, Jamie Foxx as Electro, and I don't know if you guys saw it, but I'm pretty sure Cody did since he put the story online, but I don't know if you saw Witty, but...
I did. Now, this is the guy that wears the green spandex with the giant yellow lightning bolt mask. Am I doing this right?
Yeah. You're a DC fan, so yeah, you're correct on that's what Electro in the comic book. 616 universe, though.
Is he part fish in the comic books?
No, he is not.
Okay. Because he kind of looks like a fish now. I don't know what it is, but...
I'm pretty sure they were going for the ape sapien in this. They're like...
I've seen a lot of Avatar comparisons thrown out there. I kind of buy that one.
I can see that now. I haven't heard that, but I can see it.
Well, so, maybe they're using electric fish DNA.
You might. It might be right. It might be electric kills. You're right. So... The pictures that we see of him, he's in a hoodie, in jeans and like black shoes, like tennis shoes, and he's just walking around. He's just walking around glowing. So I mean, you can't really get a whole lot from that. I don't know. Maybe he just became Electro at this point, and he's stumbling around. And I think Cody said in his article that he's got there's this Frankenstein's monster vibe to the whole deal. I don't know. The story says that he thinks he's Spider-Man's sidekick. Is that confirmed, Cody?
Well, he said, and it's kind of been confirmed since then, that Spider-Man like takes him under his wing for some reason. He's got some information or something, so he kind of starts to idolize Spider-Man and see himself as his partner. But obviously something goes wrong, and he's going to end up fighting Spider-Man. That's not really a spoiler. That's just that's just how it's going to go. And
Hate Tank Woody. Oh, well, I'm getting so like pissed off right now just hearing this.
I'm very disconnected from this whole thing because that he seemed like of Spider-Man's characters or villains in his rogues gallery, Electro seems to be the worst. So I don't think I care, but I don't know where they're going with this. I don't know what they want me to do here.
I'm going to go ahead and say this movie is already worse than Spider-Man 3 to me.
Just the costume.
The costume, it doesn't save it. They just did that because they know they made a mistake in the first one.
Wow.
Speaking of costumes, I just add that Electro will have a costume. That's been confirmed. It's just not going to be the
costume.
True, but that he's going to have a suit, but it's not going to be the green and gold.
Well, is this what he was like in the Ultimate Universe, or what?
Sorta.
Okay. Yeah, it's closer to Ultimate than anything else we've seen.
The only time I've seen the character, and I do know Spider-Man. I mean, I've seen all the cartoons. I read them back in the day, but I've never seen him, which I assume means that he's not a well-loved character, anyways. I remember in the animated series, they made him like the Red Skull's son, and he was, like, highly, highly powerful. Now, why they dressed him like a complete idiot, I don't know, but he was at least, like, sort of a powerful character. I don't know why they didn't just have the Shocker in this movie, I guess, because he at least kind of looks cool.
Yeah, the Shocker would have been pretty good, I think, but he's a lower-tier villain, so...
Oh, okay.
Okay, the next pictures that they released later on this week were Jamie Foxx in his the human form. I guess he's balding. He has Jerry Curl comb over. your thoughts, guys?
It does make the finished product look better. You know, when you see him before and then after whatever accident he ends up having.
This is before he gets in the machine for his avatar, though. So he looks like this all the time.
But it makes the transformation look better when you have it kind of in context there. But I don't know what they're going for. It's a really weird look, and all the shots they've got is just kind of him candidly standing around kind of being goofy, so it's hard to tell, like, how it would carry itself.
This is Steve Urkel grown up.
every civilian in this movie series, besides Gwen Stacy, just looks ridiculous. I don't know. The look of these movies in general seems like a roller coaster. It's like, you see Gwen Stacy, oh my god, right out of the comics. You see the Spider-Man costume, you're like, what? This movie, you see the incredible costume, which looks better than the Raimi series, and then they show you Mary Jane, who's like a 12-year-old with brown hair. Then you see this fish guy with the Derek curl, and I don't know what they're doing to me right now, man.
Well, we're gonna move forward to actual good movies, Marvel movies. Iron Man 3. It's Yay. Out in a couple more weeks. It's the first movie in Marvel's Phase 2, I guess their project or whatever. This story is Robert Downey Jr. is talking about, or he talks about hanging up the Iron Man armor. And in an interview with GQ, he talks about an ankle injury while filming Iron Man 3. And here's a little bit of a quote from that. This is him talking, I guess. He got me thinking about how big the message from your cosmic sponsors needs to be before you pick it up. How many genre movies can I do? How many follow-ups to a successful follow-up are actually fun? Because as quiet as it's kept, I come from a family of very innovative writers and directors and actors and artists. And the circle of friends they were in were the people I heard having pun-offs playing poker at 2 in the morning. And it was just the most comforting aspect of my childhood. So there's this kind of legacy of souls from what I consider to be a very particular time in entertainment, and I'm sensing a return to that. It's what me and the missus are doing next. It's not unlike I heard Brady signed up on for 3 more years with New England, and then he's done being a quarterback because he'll be 40. I'm 47, and I'll be 50, end quote. Well, to me, that doesn't mean a lot. And of course, I don't read it with the swagger that Robert Downey Jr. has, so a lot of that didn't make sense to me. So, Cody, please translate.
I love Robert Downey Jr., and he's a genius, and he sounds so suave with everything, but when you just read his quotes, like without a video, and you're just reading the text of it, he sounds like a crazy person.
Yeah.
But, I think he's just playing a little hardball because the contract negotiations started back up now that the Iron Man 3 press is kind of winding down. Yeah, he got $50 million for Avengers, but they're renegotiating his deal. I'm sure he'll sign up for at least 2 or 3 more movies, but yeah, I think he's closer to the end of his Iron Man time than kind of the middle.
Oh, that kind of sucks for us guys. I love this.
$50 million.
He confirmed that in that same GQ interview. He said it was crazy.
Okay.
I don't get it. I feel like this is a dude who has more money than he'll ever spend in his life, and Iron Man really put him on the map, and it seems like the Avengers, how long was he really filming on that movie? I mean, he's not in it's not like he's standing there in costume on the set like Tom Hiddleston or whatever, who's there almost the whole time. He he has like a limited amount of scenes and seems like $50 million for that. It's like, just do it.
Yeah,
just do it, bro. Do it for the fans, because I don't think he's replaceable at this point.
Well, all right, moving on. Speaking of Tom Hiddleston, he's in talks to star in the Crow reboot. I don't know if you guys like The Crow or read the comic book or anything like that, but or the graphic novel. But, you know, the original movie with Brandon Lee was awesome. I loved it. It's filmed here in Wilmington, where I'm from. And so it's you know, it kind of sucks because he died here too. But I don't know how you guys feel about this. I think he would be perfect for the role because I think he's a great actor.
I don't care.
Well, anyways, it says, according to the Wrap, Hiddleston had dinner with the producers of the film and showed them a makeup test he had done on his own in London. Apparently, he's a fan. He would do a proper makeup test sometime next week. As you well know, The Crow has a very iconic look, so it's important to get it correct. The film is set to go in production this fall, though that could change depending on what's happened in the next few weeks. The film will be directed by Javier Gutierrez, and from the screenplay by Cliff Dorfman, who did Warrior. So, what do you think, Cody?
I'll probably start watching this movie a little more closely. It's been in the making for a couple of years, and I think it's more interesting who was connected with The Crow than Tom Hiddleston actually getting it. Because I know he'll do a great job if the talks go through. I'm not worried about that, and it's just kind of getting rolling, but all the people that were supposed to be The Crow is kind of more interesting than that.
Yeah, they're right.
Yes, who were some of the names?
Mark Wahlberg was the last one really attached. James McAvoy. And there's one other guy. I can't think of his name right now. But Mark Wahlberg as The Crow just has so many possibilities right there.
You know, I've never read the book. I've heard good things, but I don't know if it ever seemed to be my speed. Very, very depressed and emo from the sound of it. And I liked The Crow movie, but it always seemed like way too popular, more than I really enjoyed actually watching the thing. So I'll see it if he's in it. I mean, that's all I'll say. I wouldn't see it if it's James McAvoy or Mark Wahlberg. I would see it if it was Mark Wahlberg, so I won't say that. Moving on.
All right, moving on. Michael Bay has, he's writing this. He's going to direct this Ninja Turtles movie. And I think
he's producing it.
Okay. Yeah. Michael Bay is producing the Ninja Turtles movie, and it's found its Splinter. I don't know. According to Deadline, Master Splinter, the Turtles' mentor, will be voiced by Danny Woodburn in the live-action CGI hybrid that will be directed by Jonathan Liebsman. I don't know how to say it. Woodburn has been on shows such as Seinfeld, Crash and Bernstein, and the recent Mirror Mirror. I don't know. What do you guys think about that?
Just so we're clear, if you don't recognize the name, this is the little person that often ran at Kramer and tackled him, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. He also played a leprechaun in Special Unit 2.
Special Unit 2. I actually watched that show.
Played an elf in probably several movies with elves in them.
Okay, so what do you think about him voicing the role? He has
a very unique voice.
Yes, he does.
I would encourage you to pause right now and check out a clip on YouTube of him. Just search his name, but if that's Splinter, I mean, he may change up his voice. It's too early to say right now, but I don't really hear that as Splinter.
Me neither. Also, in the Ninja Turtles front,
does he sound like a wizened old Japanese man? Maybe he tested for it and he sounds like a wizened old Japanese man.
No, he doesn't sound like that at all. He's like, my name's Danny Woodburn. Yeah. I don't know.
Unless he's going to be live action and Splinter is going to be like 2.5 feet tall. And I don't like that either.
This movie's going to fail. It's not going to come out. It's like the Justice League movie. It's never going to happen.
Shut up.
Also in Turtle News, Alan Richardson spoke about the negative reaction of the film already online. He has said, the frustrating thing for me since I've signed on is that you hear that it's already got a reputation. I think people assume they know what it's going to be about, and those people are wrong. Really? Are we that wrong? The assumptions. So. Everything you read online is wrong. You want to tell everybody how great it is. You can't really say why, but it is. Really, Alan? Because you're not a big star, dude. So this would be your breakout role, and it will ruin your career. I'm saying, go ahead and drop out. Wait for the next movie. Aquaman probably already did it for you, dude.
That's harsh.
I'm saying Smallville ruined careers.
I don't believe what any actor says anymore. Even the good ones. What was that last Ghost Rider movie? I mean, I wouldn't have believed Nick Cage saying that it's good, which he did. But who's the other actor? Idris Elba.
I
like, oh, yeah, it's good, mate. And I'm like, okay, I like him and Thor. He's a good actor. He wouldn't just lie to me, but yes, he did.
Yeah, this is the guy that was in Luther, which was like one of the best shows I've ever seen in my life. And he can't say it's bad because, you know, he's getting paid for it. So why he's coming out and trying to do publicity on the movie, you know, there, he's not going to say it's bad. Of course, now, I guarantee you in 10 years, he's like, oh, that movie's fucking sucked. He's like, that movie, oh, I was lying when I said that movie was good.
I respect the actors that just say, yeah, it sucks. I mean, I think Christopher Lambert, when he was in the Highlander sequels, kept saying, oh, yeah, it's rubbish.
Yeah.
You know how I said the last movie was sucked, and they took me back and for the third one, and yeah, this one sucks, too. But thank you. Thank you for not wasting my time.
All right, well, that's all we have about that. The next news we have is the Superman, the Man of Steel trailer arrived this week. Your thoughts on that? Of course, you know, I can't describe it, but, you know, if y'all want to.
You could try.
I don't really want to, honestly. I mean, it
starts
awesome.
On Krypton.
Russell Crowe is talking a bunch of gibberish and talks about other things and stuff happens and
stuff and things.
Stuff and things. I'm cutting all that out. But anyways, if y'all wanted to talk about it, you can. I don't really feel like it. It was awesome.
Really feeling it tonight. Anyways, it shows a little bit of war of some kind happening on Krypton. It shows Zod in chains, just like in the original movies, but really calling Jor-El out, saying that he'll find his son and do something with him, something. But I don't know. This every trailer for this, I think, feels just a little better than the last, and I think we're really in for something. What do you think, Cody?
I don't think anything they can do can be worse than Superman Returns. But Superman threw a couple punches in the trailer, which is a good sign. And it looks visually stunning. The story's pretty tightly under wraps. But, I mean, from what we pieced together, it looks pretty interesting.
Seems to follow Clark Kent as he moves from place to place around the country, around the world, and apparently he keeps making a save, and then he has to move on, and Lois Lane is following this story, which, if I remember correctly, was the starting plot of Mark Waid's Superman Birthright.
Yeah, and the S stands for hope was a direct line from that as well.
I thought so. I mean, that gives me more hope for this movie because they've changed what they said this movie was based on about four times, and then they just stopped talking about what the movie was based on. I thought they said Birthright, and they're like, oh, the Man of Steel 90s comics, and oh, no, from this and that. I was just like, God, make up your mind. Seriously. But so I'm really happy that it sounds like they're taking it from Birthright again. Apparently, you even see the LexCorp tower in it, but I don't have time to go frame by frame, Cody. That's your job.
We have a handy-dandy screen-capped article on comicbooktherapy.com with that.
Yeah, you can go there.
But yeah, the, le- the Let's Court building is indeed there when it kind of looks like meteors or whatever is falling from the sky. It's kind of a red, white, and blue Let's Court symbol on top of the building.
It's not green and purple?
No.
Thank God.
All right, the next trailer that came out, Star Trek, what do you think about that, Dez?
Oh, that's right, he's not here.
Oh, yeah, so we're not going to talk about Star Trek this week, guys, sorry. So I think we have an interview from Cody with, Mark Wade. Is that right, Cody?
That is correct.
Somebody told me you interviewed Mark Wade.
Yeah,
my first question. My first question. Does he smell nice? He seems like he'd smell nice.
We talked over Skype, so I can't comment on that.
Okay. Maybe next time.
Here's the interview, guys.
Hello, sir.
Hello, how are you?
Good. Again, I'm sorry it's been so hard to connect and so forth, but I'm good to talk now.
Oh, that's all right. I'm just glad to get to talk to you today. I was looking forward to it.
No problem.
So I was going to talk to you a little bit about Thrill Myth, the reason I get to talk to you today, and then just kind of touch base on a few of your comic projects, if that sounds good for you.
Sure.
Just dive right into it here. When you first started Thrill Bent and were really out talking about digital comics, people were talking about how you wanted to kill print and come into their homes and burn their collections. And since some time has passed and digital has become bigger and even offered as supplement material with print, have you seen those attitudes sort of change?
Luckily, yes, I have actually. At the last retailer meeting that they had before the New York Comic Con last year. 2 years ago at that one, people were, had their torches and pitchforks out, and, they were angry and assuming that I was trying to burn down stores and stuff. And now at that same meeting, everybody was mellowed out because there's just simply not one shred of evidence out there that digital cuts into print sales substantially. In fact, digital sales and print sales are both up. So it's, there's just become a sort of an acceptance of the idea that digital and print can coexist in peace.
Okay. And switching to Thrill Bent, we'll get into the more technical aspects in just a minute, but as Thrill Bent has a great formula, do you see yourself adapting and moving into different ways to tell the story itself? Insufferable has a almost cinematic experience. Do you see you adapting new ways to tell the story as you go on?
Oh, boy, I sure hope so. I mean, that's, part of the objective of Thrill Bent is that, we want to be able to look back every year at the previous year's accomplishments and go, boy, we were cavemen back then. That'd be the perfect place to be, where we're constantly learning and growing. And this is one of the reasons that I've got so many projects from outside creators coming in, because they've got new ideas of storytelling to share and new techniques, and we get to learn from each other, which I love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of exciting developments for Thrill Bent at WonderCon, this past weekend. Seems like you're really going to ramp things up as you move into year two with new stories and just new everything, really, for the site.
Yeah, the whole idea was to relaunch, and we did with April 1st. We relaunched it, basically Thrill Bent 2.0, if you will, with a whole new web interface, a new design, and more importantly, a lot more new material, where now we have, three ongoing serials, one on Monday called Arcanum with John Rogers and Todd Harris, and then Insufferables back on every Wednesday with me and Peter Krause and Nolan Woodard and Troy Petrie, and then on every Friday we've got The Damnation of Charlie Wormwood by Christy Blanche and Chris Carr and drawn by Chi. And that's just the opening salvo, because we also have several other projects lined up to roll out this month as well. You know, so by the end of the month, we'll be able to have something new up every day and a reason to come back to Thrill Bend every day. So that's, you know, that's in terms of content, that's the big exciting stuff. And then, like I said, what I like about the web design, which has been very, you know, very heavily championed by Lori Matsumoto, who is our sort of, you know, technical manager and content manager in that sense, is that Lori has worked with the web designers to make the website itself, that sort of adaptive design, so that the website automatically adapts and the comics automatically adapt in size to whatever device it is that you're reading them on, whether it's a laptop or a phone or a tablet or whatever. So I'm, you know, very proud of that.
Mm-hmm. And with the relaunch came Embeddable Comics,
yeah,
which is just another great innovation. Can you talk just a little bit about that and how that came about?
Sure. I mean, I don't know exactly when it sprang into my head, but I just do know that I was just looking for ways to make our comics more shareable and more viral, because, again, they're free to read on the site, so it's not like it's costing us readers to make sure that there's a whole new set of eyes on it. In fact, we've always been good about sharing. We've been uploading our own torrents over the past few months, and we've, you know, we make the comics files downloadable on the site so that people can put them up on web sharing sites, and to do that work for them. But, you know, I got to thinking about the fact that, you know, when we were kids, you'd swap comics back and forth and, you know, trade comics back and forth. And this would seem to be the natural next extension of it, which is, how do you set it up where we can literally give out the comics, and so you don't even have to track them down at Thrillbend. We can, you know, we can come to you. And so we built with the web designers this embeddable viewer that works just like a YouTube video, essentially, where with just a few clicks of the mouse, you can embed our comics, you know, whatever you see on the site that you like, embed that into your website or into your Tumblr, whatever, into, you know, we're working on Facebook, we're working on Twitter, and you can read it right there on the spot.
Yeah, I've used that for an article when you did the relaunch, and it just works amazingly well. You can go in there and just set it up real easy. I thought that was a great development.
Thank you.
And you use the widescreen panels, like I said, it makes almost a cinematic experience. Will that, do you see that working to move Thrillbend into things like gaming systems, be able to get content on gaming systems, for example?
That's actually one of the things we've been talking closely about with other companies, other gaming companies that are working with the new relaunches of some of the newer game platforms you'll be seeing in the next year or so. Mm-hmm. And because it's tailor-made for that. I mean, we adapted the widescreen page, the landscape format page, from the start only because we live in a landscape world. We live in a world where, you know, most screens that we encounter on our day-to-day basis, whether they're television screens or laptop screens or whatever, are all, you know, they're not portrait format, they're landscape format. So why are we not telling a story for that? But it certainly does make it easier to transition into other related media. And comics is still first and foremost what we're doing, but I certainly wouldn't be averse to Sega or Sony knocking on the door and saying, hey, let's work together.
Yeah. We're approaching almost the year mark for Thrillbend. How do you see the first year going? What's the state of the union, if you will, for Thrillbend?
Well, it certainly exceeded our expectations, which, like, I mean, it didn't crash and burn as some sort of folly experiment, which I like. We got a lot of good stories out there. We got a lot of good dialogue moving, a lot of good response from readers, and more importantly, a lot of good response from other creators who now look at this and see that this is a viable way of telling stories. You know, we had our bumps along the way, not the least of which was, you know, we got hacked at least once, and one time for several weeks that cost us a lot of momentum, unfortunately, that we're still trying to scramble to regain. But we seem to have gotten there now. Now that we've got the relaunch going, we've had our second best day ever, was last week when we relaunched, and we seem to have the momentum back. So we learned a few things. I mean, we learned about backups. we learned about server space. We learned about the bandwidth, and we're still learning about the storytelling tools. But you know, that's most importantly, you know, we're sharing with our fans and vice versa. I mean, it's been a very transparent process where we've been very open about what it is we're doing and what we're trying and how it's working and what is working and what isn't working. And, you know, I think the next step is to really concentrate on how to monetize more efficiently what we do. Because as I like to say, it's not about making money. We're not in this to make money. We're in this to do comics, but making money is the thing that allows us to keep doing it. And we're not, you know, and no one's looking to get rich. No one's even, frankly, I don't even care if we turn a profit. I just don't want us to lose our shirts. And the good news is that there's enough ways out there to monetize, that I'm confident that the worst case scenario is we break even, which I can live with. We're already doing a lot of work with Comixology, where we're sharing, you know, we're like bundling some of the chapters with some new material of Insufferable and putting that up on the Comixology site and on the Comics Plus site with iVerse. And we also have been doing the same thing with a few other of our series, and we're going to roll those out in the next few weeks, like PAX Arena and other things, and some new material as well that will probably premiere first on Comixology and iVerse, and then like a month later, read for free on the site. We'll see if, you know, we'll play around with a bunch of different models, but that's an interesting one to me, which is the idea of you can always read it free on the site, but if you want to read a month ahead, then feel free to kick in $1.99 or whatever it's going to be to read the next chapter.
Mm-hmm. And as you kind of experiment with those, are you looking at the successful kind of crowdfunding elements, as it were, and kind of seeing what will work best?
Oh, yeah. I have no doubt in my mind we're going to walk into the Kickstarter arena sometime in the next few months. It's just a matter of trying to figure out exactly what it is we're trying to, you know, communicate in exactly what it is we're trying to sell, exactly what it is we hope to get, and exactly, you know, what it is that we want out of the Kickstarter experience. It's not just a matter of going out there and shaking a tin cup and saying, hey, help us build the website, because we've already built the website. Well, you know, help us fund the website. Well, that's kind of a gray message too. That's not very specific. So we have to figure out exactly what it is, but we got a lot of good ideas.
Okay. And just kind of digital comics in general, Marvel recently announced the Project Gamma, and a few other digital projects where it offers things like soundtracks for comics. Do you see that as kind of the next evolutionary step?
It's an evolutionary step. I think the soundtrack idea is really interesting, the way Marvel has played it, because it's not specific to the timing of certain things. It's more sort of ambient background music, and the technical triumph on their end is that it changes seamlessly. It segues seamlessly from scene to scene, no matter how fast or how slow you're reading the comic. And I like the application of it that I've seen. I'm not quite sure how I would use it as a storyteller, but I'm not averse to other people trying it. The trick is that, you know, they've got Disney money. So, you know, I can tell you flat out, you know, not knowing anything more than you do, that Project Gamma is not an inexpensive experiment on their end. So it's not something that most web guys like us could hope to pioneer, but let's see if it works, and if it proves to be a viable storytelling tool down the road, then maybe we can find some way to do something along those lines.
Okay. And then I just want to ask you kind of about a few comics that you're writing right now.
Sure.
I don't want to rehash a lot of things you've already said with Hulk and Daredevil, so let's combine those. Can you talk a little bit about the crossover we'll be getting called Blind Rage, which is just a fantastic title?
Oh, thanks. Actually, yeah, that was a title. Where did that title come from? I think that was a title given to us from a friend of ours called Evan Dossey, E-V-A-N-D-O-S-S-E-Y. And I think he suggested, or Christy Blanche did, one of the two. And that gave me the nugget of the idea. Originally, it was simply just a sort of a fun team-up story between Daredevil and Hulk. And I like the idea that Daredevil is the man without fear, but even he is kind of cautious around, Bruce Banner. But beyond that, what bonds them as the team, I find interesting. Like, what common bonds do Matt Murdock and Bruce Banner have? And then one of them we've already hinted at very heavily in both the books, and no one's picked up on it yet. But the other thing is, how did Daredevil and Hulk work together? One of the things that we've started to establish is that depending upon Bruce's state of mind and other conditions during the moment of transformation, sometimes you get a Hulk that's a lot more, a lot smarter. Sometimes you get a Hulk that's a lot dumber. Sometimes you get a Hulk that's more visceral. And how does Daredevil, how does Daredevil hope to control a Hulk that is fairly simple minded and remembers him as a friend, but still it's, like I'm fond of saying with a Hulk, it's like, he's like a targeted hurricane. You never can tell which way he's going to go next. So, that didn't tell you a whole lot, does it? I guess in terms of plot, it's that Daredevil and Hulk break up a gun-running operation, like a super hyper-weapon gun-running operation in New York. But one of the weapons gets away, and it's somebody's got it, and it's loose in Hell's Kitchen. So what I like about this story is that it's bringing the Hulk into Hell's Kitchen as sort of Daredevil's partner. So it's not, it's putting Hulk in a very unusual and different environment, which is a very urban environment. And Daredevil's got to track down this weapon before the city gets destroyed. At the same time, he has to control the Hulk and use the Hulk as a blunt instrument.
Okay. Yeah, I love both of those series. So I and a lot of people are really looking forward to that crossover. So, I think you only realized you were working 23 hours a day, so you took on the Green Hornet.
Yeah, exactly. I had weekends free, so yeah. And the Hornet's fun too, because first off, it's a period piece, which is a little more fun to write, and secondly, it's a bit of a stretch because, as I keep saying, it's not a superhero book; it's a crime book.
Mm-hmm.
Because the whole gag behind the Green Hornet is that, as Britt Reed, newspaper publisher, he's a force for good, but when he puts on the Green Hornet mask and gets in the Black Beauty limousine and he's got Kato, the assistant, with him, he's pretending to be the world's greatest supervillain or the world's first supervillain. He's pretending with the mobs to be on their side to glean information and to get inside and to get, inside dirt and info that Britt Reed can then use to help clean up the city. It's not, you won't be seeing the Green Hornet save kittens from trees or, stop bank robberies. It's more, it's very much it's a very gritty sort of crime story. And then the overarching story of the first arc is this idea that Britt Reed, big newspaper publisher, force for good in the city, big, a very bully pulpit kind of guy, is starting to have an ego problem. It's starting to be a little less humble, and it's starting to believe his own press a little bit more. And what happens with a newspaper man and a media magnate who is hard to convince that he's wrong, and doesn't want to hear other people's opinions. It becomes, he's doing it out of the goodness of his heart. He wants to be, like I said, a mover and a shaker in the city, and he knows he's doing good things, but not everybody's right all the time. No one bats 1,000. And what happens when he starts making mistakes? What happens when he starts, impugning the wrong people, accusing the wrong people? What happens when the Daily Sentinel newspaper begins to prosecute and persecute, some people who may or may not be guilty just because Britt Reed thinks they are?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could kind of see that setting up in the first issue. Dynamite has just done a great job recently with all the pulp heroes. You got Chris Robertson's masks, and it just a whole new level for a lot of those characters.
Yeah, I think so.
Finally, I have to ask about the thing IDW announced at WonderCon this past week.
Oh, sure, yeah.
The Spirit and Rocketeer crossover, Pulp Friction with Paul Smith. Can you talk a little bit about that, what you're allowed to say at least?
Sure. I mean, there's not a whole lot we can say at this point, except that, like I said, when IDW came to me with the idea, I was on the fence. I mean, I wanted to do more Rocketeer, but I was, you know, as you pointed out, I don't have a whole lot of time. But when they threw out Paul Smith, and when they mentioned Paul Smith, I'm like, well, I can't let that opportunity go. I mean, Paul's a genius. Paul is brilliant. Paul is one of those guys who's on every comics writer's list of people I want to work with. And so and then they sent me some sketches that he'd done before, you know, we got a story working of any kind, and they were just beautiful. And so we sat down and we went back and forth with Paul a few times on the story. He's got a lot of input on the storytelling and on the details and so forth, because, you know, he's an aficionado of that stuff as well, and he's a stickler for detail as I am. And so it's been a lot of fun. I think the one thing I can say, without giving too much away, that I think makes this an interesting story is that, given that the Spirit premiered after the Rocketeer in terms of their own continuity, I mean, Rocketeer is, you know, 1936, 1937, on into the 40s, but Spirit didn't appear until 1940, 1941, all along in there. This means that the Rocketeer is the more experienced of the two crime fighters at this point, which is interesting because you don't normally think of Cliff as being the senior partner in a relationship. So that puts them both in an interesting position where Cliff is sort of the, you know, if you will, the senior partner in the dynamic.
Yeah, and you get to play with the Shadow. It's been a while since we've had a him in a comic book, about 5 years, really.
Yeah, exactly. So this is a lot of fun.
All right. Well, that's all I've got. I let you get back to actually writing the comics now. I thank you for letting me bother you for a few minutes and talk about Thrill Bin and what you're working on.
No, I appreciate it. I appreciate the coverage. And again, thanks for your patience. I appreciate it. And yeah, send me a link when you've got everything up. I'm eager to promote, and I'll put it up on Twitter and let everybody know to go look.
All right, I'm shooting for Friday. I'll have this transcribed and ready to go.
All right, terrific. If you've got any other follow-up questions or anything, just drop me a quick email, okay?
All right, I appreciate it.
All right, talk to you soon.
All right, bye. Okay.
Well, that was a pretty awesome interview, Cody.
Thank you.
How does it feel to interview a great?
I was pretty tickled to get to talk to him because when you start doing interviews and stuff, he was without a doubt the top of the list on people I would want to interview. So to get to cross that off was pretty exciting. And we covered a lot of ground and talked about a lot of the projects coming up, and I'm excited for the Rocketeer and the Spirit crossover especially. I think that's going to be really good.
So that's not the Shadow?
No. I was awed by talking to Mark Waid and misspoke on that last question there.
Well, you're a huge Daredevil fan, correct?
Yep, that's
so this
true.
This would be like me interviewing Jeff Johns or Scott Snyder then, right?
Yep.
How did you only mess up once?
I prepared probably more than most interviews with questions. Being a Mark Waid fan, I've read most of his interviews, and I tried to do something different and not just rehash old stuff. And he seemed to be engaged with it, so that's always a good sign to get the conversation rolling.
Yeah, I mean, he's a huge talent. He doesn't probably need to talk to any of us at all. So, if we're going to be completely honest, not that I'm putting you down, Cody.
No,
he's a hell of a journalist.
He's been around for a while, and he's wrote some of the most iconic stories for you name a character, and he's probably written. But he's one of the nicest guys. I got to talk to him for a little while, and we exchanged some emails, setting everything up, and he was just really nice about everything. When he could be like, "I'm Mark Wade. I've written all these stories, you know." But no, he's very nice.
"I'm pretty awesome," is what he should have said. You mean?
Yeah,
I'm kind of a big deal.
Yeah, I'm a big deal.
What books can we recommend off of this? I mean, I just talked about Superman Birthright, which I highly recommend. What are some of your favorite Wade books?
I think Kingdom Come is an essential read for comic fans. He did some great work with Alex Ross on all those. Of course, his Daredevil run now. It's won every award you can imagine. Which is really surprising, because there's been some artist changes, and those are usually not handled very well. But from Paolo Rivera to Chris Somni, it's been consistent. So I highly recommend that. And there's just a lot of books, but I would say Kingdom Come, Daredevil, and Superman Birthright are probably the top three that you need to check out.
Yeah, you know, I was just looking at my shelf, and I saw JLA Year One, which was written by Wade, which I read a while back. You know, it's kind of amazing. He's still in the game, still going as strong as he is, when he was pretty much doing what Johns is doing now, retelling the origin of the Justice League back after the last upheaval. And I don't think he wrote that in 85, but it's still pretty amazing.
Yeah, I mean, let's not forget his Pulp Heroes work, too. He's doing Green Hornet right now, which has just been one issue, but it was very good. And he wrote Rocketeer with his Daredevil partner, Somni, which was a great, great little miniseries there. And then he's going to revisit the Rocketeer here this summer. So he just got his fingers in about all the comic book genres you can think of.
All right, thanks, Cody. Awesome catch. What do you have for us next week?
Stuff and things.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
That stuff. If you want to read the interview instead of just listening to Cody's lovely voice, of course we have it at comicbooktherapy.com. For our next segment, I wanted to go back to our Netflix recommends pile. This week we have Batman, the Brave and the Bold. What do you guys think of this show? Are you fans of it?
It's actually pretty good. There's like some subtle adult humor in there. You know, you think it's just for kids, but then it's very campy, and it is a parody of the Adam West Batman show.
You know, I, as a Batman fan, I pretty much avoided this right when I heard of its existence. Being kiddy and being so Silver Age, I don't like that in my Batman, but I've just started watching it last week, and it's actually really fun. Basically, what I've noticed is it's just completely unapologetically Silver Age. They have Killer Moth, Kite Man, the Crazy Quilt. They don't try to dress up Green Arrow to make him look dark. He's wearing the Robin Hood outfit, shooting boxing glove arrows. There's something kind of nice about not having to take your superheroes seriously for once, and being able to use all those concepts. There's an episode that starts exactly like the 60s TV show that had Robin in it, and then later they basically show sort of the Nightwing type of origin of him without him actually becoming Nightwing. There's also a Batmite episode. You see that one, Woody?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I figured you were going to talk about it, so I just said, yeah, same.
That episode is actually pretty trippy and pretty cool. I mean, I feel like they really started to get their stride about halfway through the first season. It's a part where Batmite changes the way Batman looks just to try to get him, try to explore different versions of him. It shows the Frank Miller Dark Knight Returns Batman. It shows the Adam West, even more Adam West-y than his normal costume. They even have the Kilmer nipples, which They were not subtle about that. They stuck out about 2 feet, and I was just like, oh, my God. So if you've not given that show a try, it's just a lot of fun. I mean, we've all seen the I'm Batman. This is the exact opposite. And Batman is still – he's not Adam West, really. I mean, Dietrich Bader is the one that voices him. He sounds – there's a little tongue-in-cheek there, obviously. He's a little happier than he normally be. But he's Dick Batman, you know, that he's smart. He's not nice to anyone. He just has a deep voice, punches people in the face. It's a Batman we all know and love. But I noticed that a lot of people on this show are voiced by Tom Wilson, Back to the Future's own Biff Tannen, who he's just an awesome guy. I mean, besides that show, his comedy stuff. So I really get a kick out of hearing Biff doing voices of all these different villains and whatnot. So definitely do check that show out if you've not yet. I've heard it just gets better and has quite the ending. Although I'm not even sure if they have all the seasons on there just yet, but I'm sure they'll get around to it in a couple years. So that about wraps things up for this episode. Stay tuned for a closing segment starting momentarily. Any questions or comments can reach us at @_weeklydose or email to podcast@comicbooktherapy. You can reach me at @thewittydose, Norwood at @ncreb1986, and Cody at
@thethorverine.
All right, @thorverine. We've come to the end of the show, and that means another entry from the Val Kilmer Diaries. Hit it, Norwood. It happened again. Another massive injustice in the world that no one seems to take any notice of. Everyone goes about their daily life, oblivious to the suffering of others. Every week in Hollywood, I am thrown off the Warner Brothers lot. An injustice equal to, nay, greater than the Holocaust. Warner is the house that Kilmer built, y'all. Know what I'm saying? I made them literally $1 billion as Batman. That was all me. It wasn't the bat nipples that drew a crowd. It was the kill nipples. And I have a cheek mole that could make Cindy Crawford jealous. As I was dragged out kicking and screaming by 2 security guards, it occurred to me how much it took to believably play a father figure to Robin, a 30-year-old man I'd met a day previously. I think I effectively demonstrated my point as I stole the shorter Renacop's hat and held it aloft over my head victoriously. The taser hardly hurt at all. It wasn't my first tasing, and let's face it, it will not be my last. Not in a world where I can't just walk into a movie studio without appointment, or without shoes and shirt, demanding the head of the network listen to my pitch for Willow 2. Hollywood is filled with midgets that work for scale, and the Ring Lords movies brought fantasy back. It's a no-brainer. This jail better have cable, because Tombstone is playing tonight, and I'll be goddamned if I'm going to miss it. Whew, guys, something's wrong with our old pal Val. That's all for this week. Thank you for joining us tonight. Killing me won't bring back your goddamn honey!
I can't believe it's true that I just met a girl like you. Each night I'm all alone, my heart's an empty hole. To see you standing there would be my only prayer. You set my heart on fire, it's burning with desire. Your touch, your lips, your soul, you make me lose control. Baby, please,
baby, please, baby, please,
spend this night with me.